Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. And welcome to Nature Spirituality with Selena Fox, a podcast where we enjoy discussions with Circle Sanctuary Senior Minister Selena Fox on various topics related to nature spirituality. Tonight's podcast is an encore presentation from 2013, where Selena discussed ways of creating and conducting rituals for blessing divination tools and for doing other various forms of divination.
Welcome to Circle Craft Study with Selena Fox. This is Selena Fox, and tonight we explore divination rituals. Divination is a means to get sacred guidance. Some call divination the art of finding things out. This may be getting information from the past, from the present, from the future, that may not be readily apparent through any of the five physical senses. Divination works with intuition. Divination works with that part of ourselves that's connected with all that is. Within divination is the word divine. Divine meaning sacred, and divine as a means of delving into the great mystery of what connects us all together and goes beyond the here and now, across time and space, and other dimensions. So join with me in our journey tonight as we explore divination and rituals connected with divination. Divine that is above us, divine that is below us, divine that is before us, divine that is behind us, divine that is within us, divine that is around us, divine that is one, divine that is many. Be with us now. Guide our work in divination. So mote it be. There are a variety of different methods of divination. Some of these forms and methods involve the use of divination tools and divination systems. We're going to explore some of those tonight and some of the rituals connected with them. Tarot cards are used as a kind of picture book of symbols and concepts that can be used for meditation and can be used for divination. There are different ways of working with the cards, something called tarot spreads, which involve laying out individual cards after they have been shuffled and readied to be laid out, and laid out in different patterns or tarot spreads. The tarot spread that is selected will have certain meanings associated with the different positions. There are a variety of different tarot spreads in common use. across different traditions. One that is very common is something called the Celtic cross. There's also a spread that I use, which is called the arch, where there is a significator placed down, which is the heart of what the focus of divination is. And then there is a series of five or more cards put in an archway across past, present, future are some of the ways of giving each of those cards and their processes a position and a meaning. Another tarot spread that I've worked with is something called the Wheel of the Year. And this can be put in the form of the pagan Wheel of the Year with a card drawn for each of the solstices and the cross quarter days or Celtic fire festivals, with a central card representing the person who is the querent. But it also can be a 12-month wheel of the year where a card is drawn for each of the months of the year, the present month, and then going a full year. And sometimes a 13th card might appear in that kind of spread. So with tarot card reading, there's patterns or spreads, and there's also different kinds of decks with different interpretations of some of the concepts associated with the cards. Another form of divination, which involves divination tools, is that of the runes. These may take the form of rune sticks, rune cards, or what I most commonly work with, rune stones. The I Ching is an ancient Chinese book of nature wisdom, and it is commonly consulted with the use of three Chinese coins. But the method that I work with involves yarrow stalks, 50 yarrow stalks that are divided and worked with to achieve something called a hexagram, which has particular meanings within the I Ching, the Book of Changes. So in addition to coins or stalks, there's also the book with the commentaries. Another form of divination involves tea leaf reading. This is an old method and involves having loose tea in the bottom of a teacup, and the grounds of the tea are looked at to achieve some interpretation. Some traditions, especially those rooted in Africa, work with cowrie shells. And these are cast in particular ways with patterns having certain meanings. In addition to these tools, there are what I call the scrying tools. Working with scrying or meditative gazing into a particular form of elemental essence. Scrying in the fire, in a hearth fire, in a bonfire, in a candle flame. Looking for patterns, images from looking into the fire. Scrying into water. This may be a bowl or a chalice of water, or it may be a body of water, a lake, a spring, a pond. It may take the form of meditating for divination on flowing water and letting messages come through the sounds of the water rushing. They're scrying in air, gazing into incense smoke for patterns and shape, looking literally in the air to clouds and interpreting patterns in clouds that are perceived after a particular question is posed. There's earth scrying as well, scrying in to a particular kind of rock and patterns there, looking at some form of soil and the patterns there. And there are some additional forms of scrying, scrying in a crystal ball or some other crystal image, scrying in a mirror, often taking the form of a black mirror rather than a silver mirror, scrying with a combination of elements. And then there's divination in the form of dream work, specifically calling a dream to oneself with guidance for a particular need, or looking at dreams that come of their own accord. In addition to these forms of divination, there's divination in the form of omens, paying attention to signs in nature that appear as one is contemplating or calling for a particular form of guidance to come to oneself. These are just a few of divination forms that are available for doing divination work. And there are other forms, both ancient as well as contemporary. I created a form of egg divination involving a hard-boiled egg, working with a crayon and reflecting on possibilities for new growth in the springtime, coming up with four possibilities, creating a symbol signifying each of those, dividing the egg, marking it with a circle on the top and a circle on the bottom and four quadrants, and putting a symbol of each of the possible things that one might do to help encourage personal growth, and then rolling the egg to see which of those symbols appears and to use that as a form of guidance for how to proceed for spring renewal and growth. There are some things that people do that are actually forms of divination, but may not actually be seen as divination. For someone that takes a book and opens it at random to look in and see what passage might appear to them, that actually is a form of divination known as bibliomancy. And there's a number of people that use that as a way of finding things out and getting sacred guidance. And before shifting into rituals, I would be amiss without mentioning some of the newer forms of divination, which involve using apps on mobile devices and in the computer and cyber realm. One of my favorite forms of divination is something called the Goddess Inspiration app, in which one can work with that particular app, which is free, and focus on a question and click on the device, and a particular goddess and message appears. So that's an example of what you might call a very recent form of divination. So whatever form of divination that you may choose for yourself, or if part of your work involves providing counsel to others with divination, it's important to take a look at what you're using, why you're using it, and to develop some forms of working with divination that can enhance effectiveness of not only the process, but accuracy in what comes forth. I'd like to share with you now several types of divination rituals. And I will share the list, and then I'm going to talk a bit about each one. Forming the focus. What do you want to find out? Preparing the space. Where are you doing the divination? Blessing the divination tool or method. Attuning to and honoring divinity. Performing the divination. Interpreting the results. Formulating action. Concluding the session. Recording experiences. Implementing guidance. So let's take a look at each of these ritual forms for divination. In one sense, you could say having this entire sequence together is all part of one large divination ritual process. But each of these can be its own kind of ritual. Forming the focus. What do you want to find out? What is the purpose of the divination? You may have a general idea, but it's important to spend some time reflecting on that and coming up with a word or a phrase that distills the essence. So a good way to form the focus is to do a form of meditation. Center oneself, perhaps kindle a candle or burn some incense, sit quietly, clearing your mind, connecting with the sacred as you know the sacred, and inviting guidance on the divination focus. And if you are undecided about the form of divination, to also invite guidance about the method. Once determined, to make a note of that, and then to make a decision about when and where to do the divination. I'm going to focus on divination, that's divination for self, but knowing that each of these divination rituals can be part of divination that one does for others. So you've formed the focus, selected the method, picked the time, and picked the place. Now the next ritual is preparing the space. And while divination really can be done anywhere, it is most effective when it is done in a place that's been blessed, that has quiet, privacy, free of distractions, and a place that feels safe. There are different ways of preparing the space. If one is going to a ritual room that is dedicated to spiritual work, not much needs to be done because it is kept and dedicated for that purpose. Many people, though, when they do divination work, are doing it in a space that has other activities that may happen, especially if it's done in one's home. So clearing the space, burning some incense to clear away extraneous energies, playing music, ringing a bell. These are all some ways that one can clear a space, make a space. Many people like to have a divination altar, a place where one puts the focus in a symbolic or in a written form. And if divination tool work is being done, the divination tool or tools are placed there as well. In preparing the space, one can envision a circle of radiant light, guarding, protecting, focusing the space, or one may play a singing bowl, or beat a drum, or shake a rattle, or do some other work using sacred sound to create a space and to bless it for the working. Once one has finished the preparing the space ritual, one then moves into doing any blessing work for the divination tool and blessing oneself if that has not already been done. This might take the form of passing tarot cards through some incense smoke, or it may take the form of holding rune stones in a bag in one's hands. It may take the form of speaking some words over the scrying bowl or mirror. The idea is that you connect with the tool and you do ritual work to dedicate it to the particular divination that's about to unfold. Then we have the ritual of attuning to and honoring divinity. What form or forms of the sacred do you align with and work with as you do divination work? This can take the form of an invocation, such as I did earlier, calling on the divine in many directions to be in you, with you, to guide you, to aid you. It may take the form of calling to a particular deity and inviting that deity to guide you. It may take the form of doing a particular kind of offering associated and beloved by the deity or other sacred force. It may involve working with more than one deity. in some Wiccan circles, honoring the goddess and the god. In some traditions, honoring a pantheon of divinities. Or in some traditions, not deity focused at all, but working with a sacred whole or great spirit. After attuning to and honoring the divinity and asking blessings on the divination, then we move into performing the divination. There are a number of different rituals for that, but most have in common taking that focus, phrase, or word and speaking it, or using that as a meditative focus as the divination is being performed. Once the divination has been done, then moving to the next ritual, which is interpreting results. This often takes the form of a meditative ritual. And connected with that is formulating action. The formulating action ritual is also a kind of meditation. Considering results, and then the next step, what are possibilities for taking these results and applying them to the situation? It is good to do some form of ritual to conclude the session. And that typically takes the form of giving thanks to the divinity, of formally connecting again with the divination tool or tools that have been used, often doing another blessing of the tools to, such as passing through incense, smoke, to bring closure to that, honoring the sacred space, and if it's a place that's used for multiple things, doing a clearing to conclude, and then preparing to shift into the next part of one's life journey. The ritual of recording experiences is an important one. I record my divinations in my spiritual journal, where I keep dreams, where I keep inspirations, reflections. And one of the great things about doing the recording experiences ritual is that it helps put the divination experience into a form that's starting to manifest in your daily life, and it begins with the integration of the experience by writing down the method, what came of that, the interpretation, possible actions. It really helps draw the whole divination process into a place where it's becoming real in your day-to-day life. And finally, implementing guidance. This is a form of ritual action where after completing the divination and considering actions, finishing the session, making notes of this, one begins putting the guidance into action. This might be immediate, it might be the next day, or at some point in the future. Now we've looked at these stages of a large ritual, or each of them is individual rituals, and what I'd like to share with you now is taking an ancient divination ritual and to go through each of these steps and to describe my way of applying each of these rituals and ritual steps within the larger ritual process of divination. I began working with the I Ching about 30 years ago. I took a class at the University of Wisconsin in Asian Studies, and a classical Chinese professor, Professor Chen, was the teacher of the course in the I Ching. In addition to looking at the cultural underpinnings of this work, he presented to us as part of the class the ancient ritual that he had learned and had been passed down to him for consulting the I Ching. And as a result of taking his class, I adopted the more ancient method of yarrow stalk divination as my means of working with the I Ching. The I Ching is more than 5,000 years old. It's a system of divination that embodies balance, nature imagery, and has life lessons that transcend culture and era. When I do I Ching divination, to form the focus, I hold in my mind what is calling me to do an I Ching divination. I don't do I Ching divinations frequently. I do I Ching divinations at particular crossroad points and at special occasions. When I get a sense that it's time to consult the I Ching, I will do a very simple meditation and reflect on what the focal point may be. It may be something very specific, or it may be something for guidance for a particular point in life's journey. I write down in my journal what that focus is, all as part of my forming the focus ceremony. For preparing the space, I use the method which involves having a table covered with a cloth with the I Ching book, which I have what is many people consider kind of the classic in, for the English language. It's a book called the Bullingen Series, I Ching. It's the Richard Wilhelm translation. It's rendered into English by Carrie Baines. It has a foreword by C.G. Jung, the famous psychologist. And it has much commentary, and it's been a really wonderful book. The book, for me, represents not only the commentary, but according to the teachings that I received from the Chinese professor, this is a living embodiment of the oracle. And in that way, the book itself and the stalks that are used to consult it need to be handled carefully and need to be placed in places of honor on the altar. The altar faces north. The book is placed in the northmost part. The area is blessed with incense. And then the stalks are also placed on the altar along with a stick of incense. There are 50 yarrow stalks most stalks and bundles of stalks are about a foot long. Some are longer, some are shorter. They're of equal length and as close to being equal in thickness as possible. The yarrow stalks that I work with, I harvested in a sacred way from Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve and had been using them ever since. One blesses the stalks at the start of the divination by taking the full bundle of stalks, moving them three times around in the incense smoke. That is a way of blessing the tool. There's also a ritual as part of this longer traditional I Ching consulting ritual that is called honoring the oracle. This is the attuning and honoring divinity. Before one begins the divination, bows three times, with the book being the representation of the embodiment of the oracle wisdom. When it comes to performing the divination, there are instructions specific about how to do the yarrow stalk divination that are in the appendix of the I Ching work that I do. But essentially, one takes one stalk out, sets it by the book, and then the rest of the stalks are divided up into two bundles, and there's a series of separating out groups of four and working with remainders, and it's a pretty involved process. You have to go through certain procedures three times for each of the lines of the hexagram, and then one goes and consults the I Ching based on the particular form of hexagram that is obtained. After one has done the divination and gotten the hexagram, which I write down in my book, then the time has come to interpret results. The ritual piece for this is to sit quietly looking at the hexagram and then opening the book to the particular hexagram that's there and reading not only the commentary in the first part of the book, but also the additional commentary in the third part of the book. After reading the commentary, then the meditation is applying that to the focal point that was the beginning point of the divination, and which has been kept in mind throughout all the manipulation of the stalks. And finally, we get to formulating action, and I make a note of that as I go along. And to conclude the session, this involves, again, bowing to the book, and taking the stalks up, bringing all 50 together, and moving them clockwise three times through the incense smoke. Then, continuing with the series of rituals in this longer ritual, there is the recording of experiences. Whatever additional things one has noted comes to oneself, putting the I Ching to its place along with the stalks, and then beginning the process of implementing guidance. This series of steps in divination ritual, and each of these steps being a ritual in itself, can be applied to any of the methods that I mentioned previously. I also now would like to share some additional divination ritual considerations and approaches. There can be a ritual connected with acquiring a divination tool. If it is tarot cards, that you enjoy working with, and you get a sense it's time to get a new deck, then there's the process of shopping for the deck, getting the deck, acquiring the deck, and then consecrating the deck. That can be done in a variety of different ways. Many people will handle the deck, shuffle the deck to start putting one's own energies in the deck. Many people will, once they've gotten a new deck, bless it with incense smoke, or will speak words of blessing upon it. So you've acquired a deck, you've consecrated the deck, and then you attune to it, holding it in your hands, looking card by card, working with it, meditating on the cards, allowing your own spiritual practice to incorporate working with the deck and being attuned to it. The act of shuffling the cards is a really powerful way of getting the feel of the deck. Another divination ritual has to do with divination tool storage. For my tarot cards, I have a particular place where I put the decks that I work with. And the deck that is my oldest deck, I have a particular wooden box fashioned specifically to hold it that I use. Some people wrap their tarot deck in silk cloth to protect its vibration. Some put it in a wooden box, such as I have. Some have a cloth pouch. The act of creating a space to keep the deck or whatever the divination tool is in a special protected way is something commonplace across spiritual traditions and across divination tools. Keeping a divination journal is something that can be a fabulous addition for spiritual practice. It can be its own journal, or as I do, it can be incorporated within an existing divination and reflection journal. And something else to share is the idea of, especially with big life changes coming about, to have more than one form of divination that is consulted as part of that decision making. One might cast runes and do dream work. One may do personal divination with the I Ching, or astrology, if one uses that as a divination method, and then consult someone with a different method to get insight that way. I think it's important, as one works with divination as part of spiritual practice, to develop skills in a primary form of divination, one that you go deep and you work with. So you have a primary form of divination. But you also have more than one type of divination that you learn. And part of the reason for that is that at times you may find that you need more than one method to get guidance on a particular form of situation. So in closing this part and preparing for our conversation that follows, let's take a few moments and reflect on divination. Divination and sacred guidance. Divination taking many forms. Divination ritual involving a series of rituals that are linked together as part of a much larger divination process. Divination as a form of spiritual growth and practice. And for those of us called to do divination for others, to have as part of our journey skills in not only working with a particular divination method and tool, but in doing that type of counseling healing practice. We give thanks to the divine that's within us and around us, that's above us and below us, before us and behind us. We give thanks to the divine that's within divination. We give thanks to divination tools and guidance that are part of our life now and that can be part of our life to come, as well as our experiences of the past. Divine One, Divine Many, Divination, we celebrate you, we honor you, we thank you for being with us tonight and part of our experience. So mote it be. And now in our final part of our evening, this is an opportunity for you to call in, if you wish, with a question or a comment or an experience, a perspective about divination. Or if you prefer, you can pose some questions or comments in our live chat. And I welcome into the conversation Circle Sanctuary Ministers David and Jeanette Ewing. Good evening.
There it is. Hello, good evening.
And I'm wondering if we have any commentary, comments that have been part of live chat, or anybody calling in at this point that we might want to bring into the conversation.
Doesn't look like anybody's called in to join the conversation yet. There are a few comments on chat, though, about usually about, you know, tarot tends to be fairly popular, but with folks, and somebody's interested in trying scrying. But it's kind of, I guess, I kind of go with this too. Sometimes it's when you're trying to scry, it's easy to kind of space out and sort of lose your focus on what you're doing. But that's kind of true with any kind of meditative process too, I think, for some of us.
Yeah, I think with scrying, it's really important to have a question posed or a focal phrase available to do some work around that before one engages with the method. And then as one is scrying, such as into a crystal ball, to repeat that question or phrase, and then to allow one's visionary sense or intuitive sense to have the, like in a crystal ball, typically what happens for scrying in a crystal ball is there's a cloudiness, a veil starts appearing as one goes into a deeper meditative state, and then one may have a series of images that start appearing. Now, for some people, they start with scrying with eyes open and then close their eyes and images appear that way. But for some people, the scrying actually results in an internal messaging system, words, phrases that come internally. Or it may be a feeling sense. you're right with scrying. There's a need to go deep into a meditative state, and part of that is letting go of mind chatter to allow the intuitive processes to happen, but one has to keep enough structure and focus to allow the intuitive piece to play itself out. So scrying is something that one can learn to do. Many people find it's easier to begin divination learning with a method in which there is a system of meanings and processes already established that one can relate to, and to really work with a system first that actually has things more clearly defined. But for others, scrying may just come very naturally, and it may actually take a bit of work to make the shift into something that involves reading and memorization of traditional meanings. The call-in number for those of you who may want to join us that way in the next few minutes is 347-308-8222. Do you have a particular method of divination that you use more than others? And I guess I'm putting this question not only to those listening, but to you, David and Jeanette.
I use the runes more than any other. And one thing that I did have a question about was, where does pendulum work fall into the realm of divination?
That's another really good example of, I see it as a divination tool. And part of using a pendulum depends on the particular method that one adopts or one learns. In some systems of pendulum work, there are particular movements with the pendulum that are yes and no. So questions are phrased so that there is a yes or no answer. Some people use pendulum work as a form of dowsing, and it's used over a map to locate water or some lost object, where the pendulum will point to a particular area and then one would focus on that and then get more specific. Dowsing is a form of divination. Dowsing rods are used, and many people rely on people with pendulums or dowsing rods to actually locate their wells. And that's something, though, that does require some training, and it's best to learn with a skilled dowser that has a very good track record of being able to locate what the particular form of dowsing that one works with. Some people look at pendulum work in addition to back and forth motions, meaning yes or no. Some see clockwise or counterclockwise as meaning a yes or a no. And if the pendulum doesn't move at all, that may mean that one needs to ask at a different time, or one's not tuned into the pendulum. Different things can be used for pendulum work. Lead glass crystal or a quartz crystal are some common things, though some people will use different types of pendulum for different kinds of divination work. Good question.
Yeah. And we do have somebody called in. We have Rafe on the phone who called in with some to join the conversation.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah. so thanks for calling in. Do you have a question or a comment you want to share?
Actually, kind of both. I've been going through some troubled times as of late, and I just actually just got divorced. So I've been trying to center myself, and basically, Buckland's has been my Linus's blue blanket, so to speak.
Yes, and support to you with this next chapter of your life.
Very much so.
And we're at dark moon, new moon time, so it's a good time you're calling in.
Well, the divorce was actually done on All Fool's Day.
So you're at your first dark moon, new moon, right?
Yeah.
As you're rebirthing.
Yeah, pretty much, yes. And I've been finding that I have a very good friend of mine who has given me numerous meditation CDs and numerous boots in the behind as well, because I guess I'm a little too stubborn. So I've been finding, you know, I tried using the tarots, and I ended up having to put those down. I found that when you were talking about listening to the wind, that really struck a nerve with me, because it was, you know, I thought about the pools and the lakes and the streams, and I find that the wind is the one thing that's really grabbed my ear, literally. So I've always kind of listened to that, and the incense has helped. And I will say this, I find your show, this is the first time I've ever listened to it, and I was just completely blown away. And here I am talking to you now.
Thank you so much for calling in. Something to share, especially when there is, you know, a major relationship change, a divorce going on. Sometimes one, when there's a big life change going on, if one wants to do some divination for oneself, that can be an opportunity to try a method that one may not have had prior experience with. And let me just, I guess, share that. In fact, one of the reasons I do my I Ching only at particular occasions is that I found by being really selective when I use it, when I do use it, then it seems to speak very specific to what I need to hear. And it's I don't know if you've done any work with that, but certainly the yarrow stalk method is an amazing thing to do, but it is very involved, and it takes at least an hour, even with somebody very skilled. I did one this morning in preparation for this show, and I do honor that. Sometimes a bibliomancy method, where one picks a book that may have quotations in it, or there's a book of earth prayers, for example, and one can go open it up and, you know, with the quest, give me guidance for the day, and that can be amazing what might show up. I think in terms of nature and getting some support as you go into this next part of life, you mentioned the wind and how powerful that is. Having a time where you do allow yourself just to commune with the wind and to let the wind clear away residue from what has gone before, you know, literally breath of fresh air coming in, can be really a powerful way of being cleansed and moving ahead. And sometimes just by doing some breathing and working with air in that way, not trying to get a particular answer, but just being one with that, can really create awakening and a rebirth.
Fantastic. We actually have, where I'm at right now, we have a pretty decent storm coming in, and as I've been listening to it outside, it's been pretty much telling me, when I'm done here, I need to go out there.
And, yeah, with storm work, that can be really powerful. Obviously, one should should exercise some caution, right?
Oh,
and
right,
I do find that storms can be a really powerful way of working with the elements for personal change. And after one spends a little bit of time with storm action, and I often go on my back deck of my house, which is a covered porch, I watch storms come in, and I actually have been outside on both my porches, front porch and back porch, connecting with the storms that we've had today. Because you have, today we had like thunderstorm, lightning flash, and you have the earth grabbing up the moisture, you have the rain coming down, you've got the wind, you've got the lightning, fire, and thunder, and you have this intense spring awakening and cleansing. Thank you so much for calling in, and many blessings to you. Tomorrow's new moon. We're at the deepest dark of this last lunar cycle, and new moon is a very powerful time, especially in the spring, for rebirthing.
Well, thank you.
Well, as I look at the clock, I realize that our time for tonight is drawing to a close. I want to thank all who tuned in and connected with us, and those who will be listening later. Thanks for being part of this, and thanks to David and Jeanette, as always, for your work with this show, and thanks to the Pagans Tonight Radio Network for their support of our show every week, Tuesday night. Next week, I'm going to be doing another new Ways of Ritual workshop. I'm going to share tree rituals. With Earth Day coming up, it seemed that that would be a good thing to focus on. And later this month, I'm going to do a special show on the 23rd of April, which will be the 6th anniversary of the Veteran Pinnacle Quest victory. Roberta Stewart, who is very much on the front lines of that quest, will be a special guest on the show. And then on May Eve, April 30th, we're going to have a special journey with the fairy folk for May Eve and Beltane. And so if you wish to find out more, I invite you to join us on the web, www.circlesanctuary.org or selenafox.org, or you can join me on Twitter, Selena_Fox, or on Facebook, Selena Fox Updates.
and thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.